You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio on WTMR 800, Camden, Philadelphia.
Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
Hi, I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years now allows us to bring you great shows like the one we're about to have. And I'm blessed today to be joined by a good friend, Bill Wynn. And I met Bill probably back in 2008. I graduated the Church Ministry Institute in 2007, and it was coming out of that that I had learned about Calyx and started up a Calyx unit in my home parish. And Sister Rose, that ran the Church Ministry Institute at the time, it got in touch with me and asked me if I would go back to Lansdale and talk to the second. I think you were second year then.
Yeah.
And talk about the my ministry and the impact that the Institute had on me. And it was through that I met you, Bill.
Yeah.
And we've been hanging out ever since. It was soon after that, I think, we hooked up on Facebook and found out that you had worked with my brother-in-law.
That's funny. That was right. I forgot all about that day. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, because my sister, of all people, she lives in Florida now. I know she's not listening. She had a nickname of Goots or Gootser, and that was the name she went by. There weren't a lot of people that knew her by her real name. And somehow or other, I think I posted something on her Facebook, and you were like, how do you know her?
It was something about years ago when they first moved to Wisconsin. I remember making some dumb joke about getting a part-time job, and she got so mad at me.
Yeah.
And she pops up on Facebook, and I said, you should get a part-time job. And you said, why are you talking to my sister?
is that what it was? There you go.
Yeah.
But, and it just goes to show how, you know, God connects the dots. And if it hadn't been for the Church Ministry Institute, we may not have ever met. And there have been periods when we've spent more time together than others and what have you, as life goes. But you've been a huge inspiration in my life, and it's just been a great thing. And we were just talking before we came on. Bill and I are part of a chat group with five or six other guys. And, you know, we talk religion and politics and what have you. And they're the ones that always talk about the pipe swingers. These are, you know, guys that are solid in their faith and, you know, solid husbands and fathers and, you know, would do just about anything for anybody. And it's been it's a privilege to be a part of that group and
yeah, it's
you know, our friendship. Yeah. But so what happened was a few weeks ago, Harry, who's one of the producers here, he normally books all my most of my interviews anyway, and he was struggling to fill some spots in February. And I said, I'll fill a few. And that's why I invited you and thought you'd come on. We can talk about just about anything. But, you know, like our life stories are and the witness that we can give and see how God, you know, has acted in our lives. And you haven't had, especially the last couple of years, had a rough go of it in a few different situations. But I think, like me, you've been away from the church for a while and came back. But where did it all start for you?
I was actually born in St. Raymond's Parish. And then, before I went to grade school, we had moved to St. Joe's, St. Robert's in Warrington. And I was graduated from Wood in 1985. And I don't know if you ever heard Paul Simon's album Graceland, but there's a line there where it says, "She slipped into my pocket with my car keys." I would never say I ever left the church, but I think it slipped into my pocket with my car keys.
Yeah.
And I kind of took it all for granted. And then things have, you know, things work out. I get married, have kids. My first son was born in 1999. And at that time, he was born premature. He was born 3 pounds, 15 ounces. And my wife got very sick when he was born. And in 2002, we were expecting our second child, my daughter Julia, and they were very tightly monitoring my wife's health. And the baby hadn't grown. This baby isn't grown. She was getting ultrasounds every 2 weeks, and her heart rate started to drop. And they said, "We have to take this baby by C-section. It's her only chance." And so she was born in the 25th week.
Wow.
At 0 pounds, 14 ounces. And it was earth-shattering. You know, I was actually away in Connecticut, and I got the emergency call to come home from work, and I missed the birth by, like, 10 minutes. I never was able to live down missing the birth. But yeah. And then, you know, the whole world's turned upside down when something like that happens. And then we made the decision that, you know, she's in the NICU. We have full-time staff. I should really go back to work. So the following week, I actually went back on the road to work. And the way it would work is Saturdays and Sundays, I would go down to the hospital in the morning and let my wife and my son hang out at the house. And the second Sunday, my daughter's in the hospital. I go down to church, and I stop off at a parish, St. Coleman's on Lancaster Avenue. And someone hands out the flyer of the Church Ministry Institute. And I read it, and I stick it in my top pocket. And I get to, my daughter's at Lankenau Hospital, and I get into Lankenau. I'm sitting by my daughter's isolettes, and all the alarms begin to go off. The nurse comes in, rushes me out of the room, and I can see through the glass the doctors and nurses are all surrounding her isolette, and I'm thinking, this is it. And I make this foxhole prayer, and I grab the flyer, and I say, "Oh yeah, I'm going to get her home, and I'll do this. Get her home, and I'll do this." At that point, I'm looking through the window at her isolette, and I look up, and I see all these crosses. And I get this overwhelming feeling that this is going to be fine. God has this. Don't worry about it. We get back in, and all the alarms turn off. Turns out she's kinked a hose. It was a mechanical issue. It wasn't a major health issue with her, but it set off every alarm in the building. I got back to the isolette, and I looked out the window, and I realized Lankenau overlooks the seminary, and the crosses were on the tops of the buildings of the seminary. And I could see them through a window.
Gotcha.
And it just shook me so hard. Like, I'm like, oh, my gosh. And then this would have been, like, 2002. And then 2005, I hadn't signed up for the Church Ministry Institute. And I find the flyer in my top drawer. And I say to my wife, I really have to do this. And I told her the story at that point. I have to do this.
Yeah.
And at this point, Church Ministry, you're supposed to go through your parish priest. I didn't even know who he was. I mean, we went to church, we were registered, but I couldn't have told you which of the two priests was the pastor and which was the parochial vicar. And because we went to all different churches, I wouldn't say we went to the same church all the time. And so I emailed sister, and she said, "Oh, you're supposed to go through your priest." And I told her the story, and she accepted me as a direct admission. So I went in, and the first time I actually met my pastor was when I was talking about my project. And he was like, "You're in the what? How did you get in the Church Ministry Institute?" And I still remember when you came in, your project just really struck me as, because I had no idea what I was going to do, and your project just seemed like something the church needed so much. It was like, you know, in the city with a real problem. It was really tangible. And so I tagged along for your first couple meetings. I remember being in the basement at St. Gabe's, and I remember being your first couple things at Glenside. So it was a very interesting time. But that's how I got into the Church Ministry Institute. And at that point, that thing really – I read a lot. So the kind of work I do is I'm a business analyst for software implementations.
Right.
So you have to understand the complexity of something. So I have this ability to go into the complexity of it. So this reading of the Catholic faith, I don't think I read a business book again. By the time I got done, I had read most of the works of Merton. I'd read Henry Now, and I just went on the reading rampage and then started studying on the internet. And it was just a fascinating time to learn about the faith that all those years in school had been more of geometry, math, religion. You know,
right.
It was a very different time to be going through it, and then the events surrounding my daughter kind of gave it this meaning. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, my way of getting to the Church Ministry Institute was I was doing Bible studies in my parish and involved in all sorts of things, but I wanted the education piece. And I had never finished college, and I didn't think I wanted to go back for a theology degree, and was actually talking to a priest. He was only at St. Luke's for a short time, Father DiGuglielmo, and I told him where I was in life, and he was the one that mentioned the Church Ministry Institute to me. And so it was nice to get that. In 3 years, you get like an overview of all things Catholic, and you know. And when I started, I had no intention of starting a new ministry.
Right.
You know, I was already. If you ask my wife, she'll still tell you I'm involved in too much, and even then, because I had two young kids at the time, and but it was the Holy Spirit was relentless in doing something for Catholics that were in recovery, and Calyx was a direct result of being in the Church Ministry Institute. And I have to apologize to our audience because I tried to find out right before we came on whether or not it was still around. And I'm not sure if one of the odd or God things is that, you know, Sister Rose that ran the Ministry Institute for so long is now the DRE at St. Gabe's down in Grace Ferry.
Oh, she really?
Yeah.
That's so
yeah.
funny.
So I see her a couple of times a week now, and we all reminisce once in a while about those days in church ministry.
My wife always, at the time I was in it, my children were in Little People Church School. And my wife used to call it Big People Church School. I always thought that was a better branding for it. You know,
yeah.
Big People Church School might be a better name.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it, I mean, back then it you know, it was for people that wanted to get involved in some sort of ministry or people that were already involved in their ministry at church and to give you a deeper insight. And,
yeah.
I found it really worthwhile, but I am nowhere near the reader that you are. I don't know how many brain cells I fried, and I have really struggled with comprehension sometimes, but I know just because of the information that you feed to me that you're still the relentless reader.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I just a habit I got from my mother, always did it, read that way. Yeah. And so then after the Church Ministry Institute, I really didn't. The main thing I did with church was I taught our Old Testament prep and then got involved with our TMIY group at our parish, or That Man Is You group. So
yeah.
It's been interesting. But I never really ran a ministry like you did. My kids were young. I was still working. And then, so it was kind of an interesting time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But you were in That Man Is You. For our listeners that were listening the previous hour, Luke called in.
And oh, was he? Luke was in our group.
For St. Maria Goretti.
Yeah, St. Maria Goretti, yeah.
Yeah.
That was funny. So,
and I was always impressed because just the number of guys that you were getting during that. And it was lengthy, right? That program, 2 years?
It's still going on. We've been doing it. We started in 2015, and we do it on Wednesday mornings and Saturday mornings. And sometimes you've had as many as 12 guys a session. Sometimes it goes up and down depending on time of year, but
right.
We get a good number of people, and then it's been a good experience. It's been good for the parish as well too. It's increased involvement and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, especially for men. I mean, they're so desperately needed in our parishes, in our families, and you know, I think they're the linchpin to to rebuilding our church, to having solid Catholic families. You know, the studies that are out there, if the father and husband go to church, you know, it's more likely that the kids will continue to go than if they don't. But it's no guarantee. You know, I struggle just like a lot of other parents that are out there and getting their kids to church. And but my wife reminds me all the time, you know, I was away and it took some things in my life to bring me back. And, you know, pray that for them it doesn't have to be as serious as that they find another way back, but they'll get there.
Yeah, it's crazy. But the one thing interesting about it's amazing how different resources lead you to other resources. Like, one of the things that came out of that, Man Is You, someone led me to this book. I don't know if you ever heard a book called Breathing Underwater by Richard Rohr.
Yep.
About the culture taking the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. So the next thing I kind of got into was I took the online video course for that book. And in that, my grandmother used to say, when things come in threes, that's the Holy Spirit knocking on your door and you better answer it.
Right. Right.
So watching a video in that course about Peter's denial by a guy named Rene Girard, and it floored me. The video just was so, he opened up so many things with this little perception of this little Bible story. And then the next day in my email, I'm on Bishop Barron's email list at this point, and he sends out a YouTube video about the death of Rene Girard. And he basically says, this guy in the centuries to come will be a father of the church. And I'm like, who is he? I've never heard of this guy. And this guy says he's going to be a father of the church. Then the next day in the Wall Street Journal, this would have been June 2016, they do an article on a guy named Peter Thiel. I don't know if your audience would know who Peter Thiel is, but he's a Silicon Valley investor. He founded PayPal. He was the first investor in Facebook. And he's going to be speaking at the political convention. And he's going through his biography, and it says he's given hundreds of million dollars to Imitatio to further the teachings of Rene Girard. And I'm like, Rene Girard with Peter Thiel? So this was in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I go look into why is Peter Thiel with Rene Girard. And here he's a professor, had been a professor at Stanford. And all these social media guys are in Girard's class. So now who is Rene Girard is turning in my head. So I go on Amazon and I pick out books about Rene Girard, and I get a book called I Saw Satan Fall Like Lightning. I tell you, I read that book, and I remember saying to my wife, I feel like somebody literally took forks, plucked out my eyeballs, and put in two different eyeballs, and I see everything differently now.
Wow.
It had such a dramatic theory that went down to the roots of how things started. And then I went on to 2016 to read a large number of his books. And then 2017, I think this goes to the stuff you were talking about the challenges that began to happen in my own life. So 2017, my employer asked me to move to Texas. My wife's just been promoted at her job. So we make the decision, you know, my wife's been following my career. I said, you take your promotion. I'll figure out what I'm going to do. And what I ended up doing was taking care of my parents. Literally the day I stopped working, my father got sick.
Right.
And he passed in August. Then we had to put my mother's in an Alzheimer's facility. And then in December, my wife had a heart attack at work. She passed away. And later that week, I was diagnosed with cancer, all within a year.
Right.
And so it was really kind of intense change. So I stopped reading Rene Girard at that point. And then had two kids, one in freshman college, one in high school at Pope John Paul. And that became my focus for a while. And then that all got settled out. My son's doing well. He's a senior in college. My daughter's now a freshman in Duquesne. And then in September of this year, actually Lent of last year, I made this commitment that I was going to go to daily Mass, and I was going to spend an hour after Mass writing on a single subject every day. I always journaled, but if you read my journals, they were fragmented. It was random thoughts. So I said, I'm going to write on one subject. And the subject I chose was the crowd. A lot of Girard's writing is about crowd dynamics. Now, the crowd is the most powerful force on earth. So I said, I'm just going to write every day about the crowd. And that's the thing I forwarded you.
Right.
I said, would you be a reader of this for me? Would you be a reader of that for me? I forwarded it to a few people. I haven't written since then. That 40 days was just kind of a commitment. I discovered I don't think I'm a writer. But it was very good to clarify my own thinking on Girard. And then I started digging back into it again. and I got into a guy named Gil Bailey, who was a student of Gerard's, and a guy named James Allison. And I've just been following down this path to see where it takes me. I don't really have a plan, but the Gerard, you said about talking today, I think this is a subject that I think a lot of Catholics aren't aware of René Girard.
No.
And he's not very typical. I mean, he's not, he doesn't write theology. He writes anthropology.
Right.
So I don't know how much time we have. But.
Yeah, we've got 8 minutes before we go to the break.
Right.
And I remember when you first told me about him, and I picked up one of the books. I never finished it. But it was, to your point, it not about theology, but it's much about mythology and all these belief systems,
right,
over, you know, since the beginning of time, and
right,
how he went back and went through them. And was he always a Christian?
It's funny. He was – René Girard's father was actually the papal curator of the Avignon – Museum of the Avignon Popes. So he was raised Catholic, and he was like us. He you know, we got out of college, he became a professor, and he came to the United States to teach in U.S. universities. He actually, one of his books, his third book, he talks about how it converted him. His own book converted him.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was his main theories. He has a book called Violence and the Sacred, where he basically talks about what religion actually is anthropologically. That why did it first come up in the earliest tribes? And he says it was a means of managing violence. That at the root of all human culture was violence. That society gets out of control. It gets out of order. And the only way to put it in order is to unify it by something. So he said what we were unified is they were unified against a scapegoat. That they came out, one person got blamed for everything. Unity, the culture, came against the unity against that scapegoat. And then they literally, violence was at the bottom of the culture. And what he says is religion then becomes, if you look at religion, and it has all this language in it, like ritual. What's a ritual? It's almost recreating the guy they killed. All these rituals are about the recreation of something that was taboo. It was a murder. It was a human sacrifice. And it would take it just to the point of the crime to get the cathartic event. Like, imagine in this country after 9/11. You hear people talking about after 9/11, like that, everyone was so unified in a cause. The country was together. Everyone was on the same page. What Girard says is that's the cathartic impact you get when these early cultures organized against an enemy. An enemy might be a better story than like a scapegoat. Like, so think about that tribe over here is my enemy. Now we're totally united.
Right.
So ritual was recreating the events that led to that unity. And he gets into the language of it. Like, he says, if you even look at the language of religion, if you break out the word religion, it actually is re-ligare. Ligare is where we get our word ligament. So it's about binding back together. It's about bringing us back together. If you get liturgy, that is a public work. Like a football game, a concert, that's a liturgy, something we do in public. So religious liturgies are these public events that bind us back together. And so he gets into the meanings of these words, and he goes, at the root of all these rituals is always remembering. Well, you can only remember something that's been dismembered, right? There was a community of which you were a member. That community has been fragmented. Everyone's against each other. Let's remember via religious liturgy what brought us together. So he gets into this anthropology of where religion came from and why it's the same all over the world. Like, they always had these theories like there must have been one source, or there must have been somehow they all got the same information. And he says, no, it's a natural dynamic of human behavior, and they all fell into the same pit where they became so rivalist and contentious with each other that unity came when the unity of all against all was replaced by the unity of all against one,
right,
whether that be a scapegoat victim or an enemy or something of that nature. Because this is why every ritual, every monument in every culture they found is a pyramid-shaped pile of stones, because it's over the body of the first person they stoned. Right. So it's kind of where he gets to with violence and the sacred.
Yeah, and you see it. So when we talked about it, whether it was over lunch or via email or the text messages you would send, you can see it. Even you know, right up till today.
Yeah.
With the way society acts today, and the things that we see all around us, see on the news, the things that we hear about, and you know, you don't think we're all that violent until you really look at it, and like you said, with this new pair of glasses, with these new eyeballs,
yeah,
and you see things completely different, and now you can actually understand why there's the chaos that exists, especially today in our own world.
Oh yeah, it's totally like that was the thing about it in 2016 was it was like I was watching it unveil around me as I was doing it. Like Gil Bailey, who's a student of Girard, he's Girard writes in French and translated to English. Right. Gil Bailey might be a little bit easier for people to start with than Girard, but Bailey uses this analogy that I think is really good. He says, you know, the concept of a holy communion and the concept of an unholy communion. In an unholy communion, the center is a lie. It's not true. Like, this person's not your enemy. That person's not guilty. And when you lose your enemy in an unholy communion, the whole thing collapses. Right? In a holy mm-hmm. communion, the Logos, Jesus Christ, the logic of the universe, that's truthful. That stays together. That resists, that holds together over time. So, like, in our situation here, people ask me what's going on. Like, I'll give you my own little back-of-the-envelope thing. To me, I think it starts when we lost our enemy. When the Soviet Union collapsed, right, we no longer had an enemy. And people in power were trying to, you know, the party out of power who's trying to get in power now has to create problems.
Right. You have to create the enemy.
You have to create an enemy. So the only enemy to create is you or that guy. So I think we've lost, this is what Girard says, like, what the crucifixion does is the cross is it breaks the back of the ability to create culture in the old way. And I think it's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing competing accusations back and forth and competing news stations and which accuser are you going to align with?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Very
does
good.
That make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a break here in a minute. And when we come back, you know, this idea of the crowd and, how Jesus ends up, you know, on Palm Sunday, everybody's singing Hosanna, and five days later, they're nailing him to a cross.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
to think about that.
Absolutely. So we're just about at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to give out the phone numbers in case anybody else wants to chime in. The numbers are 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906. Or if you need to call toll-free, maybe you're listening from a distance over our website at inhissign.com. You can reach us at 888-343-2484. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm writing this radio commercial on the 22nd of August, Feast of the Queenship of Mary, and on also, which was the apparition of Our Lady of Knock yesterday. This is the very first time I was ever led to do a commercial break on a specific date and then be asked to publicly note it. And thanksgiving to all of you for supporting us these past four decades in fidelity and love, I commend each of you and every single member of your families to Mary, Queen of Heaven and Earth. Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee. In His Sign, Catholic Radio is under the patronage of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Our studio is called Kolbe Communications Center. We too continue to preach and teach the truth of our one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church under the mantle of the Immaculate. As with the woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head, I am standing in faith and I am praying for the next 12 months, 12 stars may come forth to be the corona
shining through the darkness at this time in this age to help keep this apostolate on the air, to preach, to teach, to heal, to deliver. The teachings of our one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. Will you be one of those stars? I'm praying for 12 stars to help keep In His Sign Catholic Radio on the air. Thank you, and God bless you.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of you and all that you do for us here at In His Sign that allows us to bring you shows like today's. I'm joined in the studio today, which is always a blessing. Normally, my guests are calling in from all over the country, authors, writers, and what have you. So to have somebody in the studio and just have a conversation is awesome. Doesn't happen all that often. And my guest today is a good friend of mine, Bill Wynn. Bill still lives up in, is it Hatfield?
Harleysville,
St. Maria Goretti Parish. And we get together once in a while, mostly over technology, but still get together once in a while face-to-face. And Bill was talking a little bit about, you know, what's going on in his life, especially over the last 20 years or so. And we've been talking about Rene Girard, theologian and somebody like I, you mentioned most people don't know about him. I had never heard of him until you told me about him and started feeding me some information and sources, videos and audio files to listen to. And it's like everything that he put on paper, every word that came out of his mouth, just it explains exactly what's going on in the world today. And so, you know, so many people say, you know, how do we get here? What, you know, how could things ever get as bad as they are? Why does God let this happen? Right. I don't think God's necessarily directing it. He's given us free will, and we can do just about anything we want. There's going to be consequences for doing it. But, there's just so much chaos now. But, what Rene Girard taught and the explanations that he gives, they just make perfect sense. And
yeah. So the book we talked about before is Violence and the Sacred. The next book Girard writes is called Things Hidden Since the Foundation of the World. If you're going to read Rene Girard, that's one of the key books, but I would not start with that book. I think that's an interview with Girard about his theory. And that book is where he introduces the Bible. But he doesn't introduce the Bible as an analysis of the Bible. He introduces the Bible to prove the theory he wrote in the other book. Because at that point, he rereads the Bible, and what he says is, in Violence and the Sacred, he says the center of everything is the victim. And all myth hides this. Like, there's a big difference in Girard's writing between myth and gospel. So myth is what the people in power tell people to justify what they did. Where gospel is the truth about what really happened. Right? So he says, when he read the Christian Bible, he realized that this is the first text he's ever read that has the voice of the victim in it. Every other ancient text is a myth that has the justification of the actions in it. So I've told you what, you know, if you listen to Oedipus, Oedipus slept with his mother and killed his father, right?
Right.
Because he compares it to the story of Joseph. He goes, Joseph, when he's a slave, is accused of sleeping with the woman of the household, but it's a lie. You know Joseph is innocent.
Right.
The Bible's the only book that lets you know the victim is innocent. If you take it through the Psalm 22, if you ever read that whole psalm, he says, I forget what that says, though. So the psalms are sometimes the voice of the victim. The prophets are the voices of the victim. And Jesus shows you the passion, the week between Palm Sunday and Good Friday. It's amazing to see how the crowd changes.
That's right.
Right. So what changes the crowd? Why is he Messiah one day and crucified by Friday? Messiah on Sunday and crucified on Friday. It's accusation. like all these accusations begun to get made with him. Like when they take him in the agony of the garden, they scourge him, they put him in purple, they put him in a crown, then they present him to the people. He's basically a theater prop for their accusation.
Right.
Right? That's what he is. And these accusations inflame the crowd. You see that in our politics all the time. It's basically competing accusations. You know, you're trying to control our lives. You're trying to do this. It's perpetual accusation. And what Girard points out is the root word of the word Satan is the accuser.
Mm.
That's what the word means. So in the ancient trial, it was the Satan and the Paraclete. Satan brought the accusation and the Paraclete was your defender.
Right.
This is where he gets the first video that lights my fire as Girard is the one about Peter's denial, where he says Peter's all men there. Humanity, it's a prophecy. Humanity is either, you're either going to be in the camp of Peter, where you're going to seek God's mercy, or you're going to be in the camp of Judas. God never judges Judas. Judas judges Judas.
That's right.
You're never going to turn to God. You're going to be self-reliant, and that's where you're going to end up. And so that's the dynamic that he brings to this. Like everything's in pairs. So when he goes through that Passion Week, it's so amazing to watch how the whole crowd switches. And he uses a word for it. He calls it the mimetic contagion. Mimetic, this is how you know he's writing as an anthropologist, not a theologian. If he was writing as a theologian, he probably would use the word coveting. But mimetic is, I guess Aristotle and these guys use mimetic. It comes from the word mime or mimic.
Mm-hmm.
So people mimic each other's desires. Like, see kids with a pile of toys. There's 10 toys there. One kid picks up the ball. The other kid now has to have the ball. The other 9 toys will be totally ignored. And the kids will fight over the one toy because
that's right.
We mimic our desires. It's almost like a trinity. It's the object, I have it, and I want what you have, right?
Yep.
And so it gets so out of order. And he says this mimetic contagion is what inflames the crowd on Palm Sunday, between Palm Sunday and Good Friday. They pit each other against each other, accusation after accusation, and the entire crowd is inflamed.
So, right.
Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does make sense. And we just had a minute, and we're talking over the break, and you know, Girard had mentioned it, and we've talked about it. Where, you know, you have people that are enemies that when they have a common person, a common ideology, or what have you, to go after,
right.
that they become not necessarily friends, but they become joined in their efforts to attack the scapegoat. So in the case with Jesus, it was Herod and Pilate, right. Who, you know, normally would not have gotten along, but because they have a common scapegoat in Jesus,
yeah,
they more or less become, and it even says it in Scripture, right, that it, from that point on that they became friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even today, our own political parties are merging, right? Certain people, they're merging with each other. They're aligning against different enemies.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy the way he predicts, and this is what I think he talks about. The other thing Girard, I think, highlighted to me is that he talks about things hidden from the foundation of the world being a pattern that's repeating itself.
That's right.
That you've killed all of my prophets. You've killed all these people going back to the foundation, and it starts with Cain and Abel.
Right.
So he says, this is where another reason where he compares the Bible and myth. He does a lot of comparison between Cain and Abel and Romulus and Romulus. Right. So in both cases, Rome is named for the victor in the conflict between Romulus and Romulus. And Cain becomes the Canaanites.
Right.
Right. So Cain's known for two things in the Bible. He kills his brother and he founds the first city. And Girard says they're the same thing. That this is the violent lie at the core of culture, is that culture founded on violence will always fall apart. This is the saying in the Bible where the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. They've rejected Jesus, and he's become the cornerstone of the church culture, which is the culture that will last.
Right.
So that's kind of where. So he does these analyses of the Bible that are more anthropological. So we always tend to read the Bible theologically. What is God telling me? What's my message from God? By reading the Bible anthropologically, you're almost saying, what does it say about us? This is really about us.
Right.
So it's a whole different worldview. And it's actually deepened. He's been very consistent with Catholic faith, because when the term mimetic contagion, he actually presents the solution as also being mimetic, but it's things like the imitation of Christ.
Right.
He gives you such an understanding of sainthood, right? And then so people get caught up in this, then they can't get out of it. Like he says from the cross, forgive them for they know not what they're doing. So he says this crowd mentality is the most powerful force on earth. It even corrupts Peter. The person who's most fisted in Jesus gets caught right into the crowd mentalities. All the apostles run away.
Right.
Even John's at the cross, but he's hiding among the women. You know, he's not standing there being brave, talking down to the Roman soldiers, saying, getting them down.
Right.
He's hiding behind the women, right? So they've all run away, right? And then Jesus says, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing, because this crowd thing is the most powerful force on earth, and you see it just pull people in, you know? And it's just amazing how he and these things, you see it all around us now.
Yeah, and people that want to be a part of a crowd, and it's not like a physical crowd where, well, for some it may be where they all get together and maybe they go protest somewhere or something like that. But it's more that you want to feel a part of this crowd, especially in this world with social media and those types of things. You can you can be a part of multiple crowds or think that you're a part of because of what you post on social media and
exactly,
you know.
The term, you say social media, because that's another interesting wow. If you go to the Peter Thiel angle of this, Thiel being a Silicon Valley investor, the first person in Facebook. That's funny because Thiel actually did part of the eulogy at Gerard's funeral. But there's this interview with Thiel where Gerard almost becomes excluded because he goes down the Bible path. Thiel even says, oh, he was so good, then he had to go get Christian.
Right.
It was funny the way he said it. Like, then he had to go do this. But in the Facebook world, we always hear the term meme, like a meme.
Right.
Well, that comes from Gerard's writing. It means mimic, evolve. It's an acronym for how an idea spreads to a crowd. Gerard's not the first one to use the word mimetic. I mean, Aristotle used it. Other people have used it. But that's the idea of that word. It's an acronym for mimic, evolve.
Right.
So he's like, if so many of these social media founders were in his classes. And that is the mechanism that social media works by. And it works so fast, so quick.
Right.
You know? So there's a lot to unpack with him, but it's hard, I think, to present to a like, how do you get it out of the textbooks and into the pews?
Right.
How do you get people to
You're doing a pretty good job of it
to work that way, right? So that's kind of the thing I've been thinking about now that, you know, my whole life has changed. What do you need to do here? Like, we just completed the first Bible study on Rene Girard we did at our parish. Our That Man Is You group, it takes a break over Christmas, but we still meet on Saturdays. Usually we did gospel reflections. This year we did a Bible study that Gil Bailey had put together. Gil Bailey was a Dominican, taught at the Dominican Seminary. He was a student of Girard's. He's the most Catholic of the Girard followers. You'll find a lot of business people follow Girard, a lot of economists, a lot of psychologists, but they don't really get into the Catholic side of it.
Right, right. They're looking at it more from how do I create something that everybody wants wants to mimic.
Yeah, Thiel looks at it like almost utopian world. How do we prevent violence? But Bailey has a lot of recorded Bible studies. He did a four-part Bible study where he analyzes the Bible from a Girardian perspective. How much time we got? But I'll give you a quick little. A very interesting story is the story of loaves and fishes, from a Girardian interpretation of the story of loaves and fishes. So we've always learned it in school, like, you know, he had five pieces of bread and he fed all these people with all this bread. What Bailey puts together from a Girardian perspective is, what you got to understand is the Jewish culture was fragmented. They were falling apart. And one of the rules of the Jewish culture was you couldn't eat with sinners. So you had 5,000 people in a field who thought everyone else was a sinner. He goes, Jesus didn't multiply food. Jesus mimicked behavior of sharing. And once he did it, they all broke out the food that they had. They had all the food with them that they needed. They just saw everyone around them as a sinner.
Right.
So what Jesus did was he modeled a forgiving behavior. It was how the mimetic, you can prevent mimetic life as a problem, But Jesus then presented it as a solution. So once he started sharing the breads and fishes, then that guy started sharing the breads and fishes. Then they were all sharing their food.
Right.
Then they had more food than they ever needed.
Yeah, I remember the first time you shared with that with me. It was like my world was turned upside down because, you know, I would be willing to bet that 90% of the people that are listening to this right now are thinking, wait a minute, Jesus didn't multiply all the, you know, the bread and the fish?
I have no idea. But
but to your point, though, if they knew that they were going to travel and be there for the day, chances were, you know, they're going to bring a snack. When I go to the pro-life march in D.C., I stop at Wawa before I go and get a sandwich and a bag of chips and a couple bottles of water because I know that I'm not going to be able to get food once I get there.
Right.
And so... And not that a miracle still happened, right? So, but whether it was that Jesus actually multiplied and created bread and fish from nothing, or he created a miracle where people that would never ordinarily share what they have with anybody are now willing to share those things. And I think we see that sometimes in culture where we bring people that normally wouldn't get along, people that maybe haven't been to church in a while, and they come back and are willing to open up and share. And it doesn't have to be necessarily be food, but share their lives, share, whatever else they have.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's funny because I think culture is the key. I think you just hit the key word. Like, if you read a lot of Bible stories, like if you read about the 10 lepers, right, the 9 lepers who are Jewish all go off to tell the rabbi. It's only the leper who's not Jewish who goes back and thanks Jesus. The cultural trap, Jesus is really unfolding a cultural trap. Like, the culture is, like, at one point Bailey would even say, Satan himself is the system of order. Right? So if you look at how the evil one works, you know, he has three personas. Right? You have Diablo, who sows confusion and creates mayhem. You have Satan, who organizes everyone with an accusation. And Lucifer means light bearer who shows you half the truth. And Lucifer creates the myth that keeps the system of order the accusation creates functioning. Lucifer's basically fake news, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you can think about Lucifer as fake news, right?
Right.
And keeps everyone thinking in order and then keeps the accusations functioning and everything working correctly until we can get... This is why I like the idea of the holy versus unholy communion, I think, is a very interesting way of looking at it.
Right.
And then religare, religion being religious liturgy. If I had to say what's the solution to our current problem, it's religious liturgy. It's public works that bind us together.
That's right.
Get out of our homes, get into our churches. There's so many different prayer services in the Catholic book. I mean, all we ever use is the Mass. You could fill your churches every night. Like the stuff Luke does at his one parish, I went down the Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Candlelight thing. That's a very interesting model for every parish could be doing what they do at St. I think it's Francis of Assisi. Is that what
yes.
it is?
Yes. Yep.
And we do it at Maria Goretti. We do something called Acts once a month. I think it's going to be this Thursday. Those type of things, it doesn't have to be the Mass. It can be daily prayer. It can be anything. It's these public works that bind us together, I really think, are the key to our current dilemma.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the pandemic caused was nobody interacted. We were all holed up in our houses. I said for a long time I was fortunate we had bought a place in the Poconos and I went and lived in the mountains for 5 months, but we lived in isolation.
Yeah.
You know, I'd go out and see my neighbor, but, you know, we're going to Mass on a computer.
Yeah.
And that was it. I mean, thank God for Calyx. And one of the things that did come about as a result of I think of the pandemic is people found ways to continue to get together, whether it was Calyx or 12-step meetings or Mass. I'm sure there were other groups, prayer groups and what have you. I know there were groups that were getting together and praying the rosary.
Yeah.
But it's still not – it's nowhere near the same, I think, as when you actually get together physically.
Right.
And share that with folks.
So that's – I think there's a lot to Gerard. It's just a question of – How do you get it into the out of the books and into the pews? And because I think it's really so simple.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds so stupid, really. This is, it's imitation.
Yeah.
But it explains everything once you multiply it by a million. Like, you take it down from the beginning and see it multiplying through things, and you're like, oh, it really is everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah. No, you said before the project you did last Lent where you were writing for an hour each day, and I'm not a writer. And it's like, well, maybe there's a Gerard for Dummies in your future. You know?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, no, seriously, because, and like you said, Bishop Barron was not a devotee, is probably the wrong word, but he studied the writings of Gerard, and I'm sure he had probably communicated with him at some point. And, you know, if Barron thinks that he'll be a doctor of the church someday, or a father, of the church, that it'll probably come out sooner or later. But I think the sooner that it does, because everybody is looking for the answer as to what's going on right now.
Right.
You know, and everybody, the one person in particular that I listen to, he says it almost every day now, it's time to choose a side.
Right.
You know, and really it's not so much about choosing a side, because we're really all in this together, and to pit people against each other, whether it's about the culture, the religion, politics.
Jordan has a very interesting, I wish I'd written down this quote, I'm not going to get it right for the thing, but a very interesting perspective on the victim and communism and what it is. So he basically says what you see happening is, where the victim has become key. Jesus made the victim key, right? And so if you think about how the victim can be used. So what you see is the victim getting used for his own purposes, not really being for the victim. So he calls it victimology, is the use of the victim to gain political, financial, or spiritual power. So if you think of I always looked at the gospel, ever since I read a book by Henry Nouwen called In the Name of Jesus, The Three Temptations in the Desert has been the interpretive key to the gospel, right? So if you look at those three temptations and you put them in the terms of that Paul used of power, you have the power of culture, you have the power of wealth, and you have the power of institutions. At the time of the crucifixions, those three powers are personified. The Jewish priests have the power of culture, Herod has the power of wealth, and Pilate has the power of the institutions. It's the personification of the three spirits in the desert. And what Jesus does is he goes in a fourth direction of self-sacrificing love. And he tricks them. When I did the writing, the most shocking thing that came out of me in my own writing is I think there's no way those three groups of people did not know they were killing the Messiah. That they knew they were killing the Messiah, and they would even kill God to keep their worldly power.
Right.
So that was the one thing that came out of my writing that shocked me after I wrote it. Like, do I really believe that? Is that what I really think? And I think that these worldly powers are so important to these people once they're infected by it. He says, what you see in communism is so seductive because it sounds like Christianity.
Right.
But it's not Christianity of free choice. It's compelled force. It's Christianity by compelled force. And it's a sign that the only tool in Satan's arsenal now is the victim. It's a sign of the victory. Communism is a sign of the victory of Christ, because Satan's only tool right now is the victim. Right?
Right.
And when Gerard says that was a shocking thing to be in. His last book is called Battling to the End, where it was that one was hard for me to read. I didn't even have it on my list because I didn't know I understood that one. But that was one of the things he says in there, is communism is a sign of the victory of Christ, because the only tool left in Satan's arsenal is the victim.
Right.
But you're not going to be a choice like we have in Catholicism. It's going to be forced and compelled by the state. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense, because, it's what we're seeing all over the news these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, up in Canada and the freedom protest, regardless of which side you're on, I mean, it's about people's real or perceived idea of what freedom is. And Jesus gives us the ultimate freedom, right? And, and to the point where, he was free to set the trap like he did.
Yeah.
And that's the one interview that I recall listening to with Gerard, and he talks about how, Jesus just flipped everything on its head.
Right.
From the beginning of time until the crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell right into his trap.
Right.
And You know, I remember you talking about the writing, and you know, we'll do just about anything to preserve what we have.
Yeah.
You know, we'll defend the wrong thing. I've seen it even in my own life, where even though I know I'm wrong, I'll still continue the argument because I don't want to be defeated.
It's funny. One of the very interesting insight came from Tim Gray is from the Augustine Institute. I listened to one of these his Lighthouse Catholic media tapes. I forget the name of the one, but he has a very interesting insight in this regard, where he talks about the gospel story where Jesus talks about Caesar and the coin. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's.
Right.
He says our political issues, and I think this is what Gerard's getting at with the victim being used as a weapon, is our political issues are perfectly articulated satanic traps. Try to say you're against women's rights. You sound like a barbarian. Try to say I'm not pro-life, I'm pro-death.
Yeah.
You sound like a barbarian, right? And they're designed to put you on your heels. Like they've turned the victim into the weapon. But how they perfectly constructed the thing where you can't oppose it. You sound like a barbarian.
Right.
And you can only answer them with parables. So what do you mean by that? You can only answer them with questions. This is why I think Jesus talks in so many parables, because the lies of the Jewish culture are so well worded at that point that they can only be deconstructed. They can't be dealt with because they've lied to themselves so deeply they don't even know what you're talking about.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
Yep. So. We got just about 2 minutes left. And when we were texting back and forth about doing the show and what do you want to talk about, and I didn't realize that Rene Girard was going to monopolize the show, but I think it's great. I don't know how many people we've confused. but the revelations that I've gotten from hanging with you and what you've, you know, given to me and the small group that we've got together, and I'm sure other people that you've talked to, is an understanding of the culture,
right,
of where we are. And I get it now.
Yeah.
You know, people will rally about anything to be a part of
anything,
you know, and even if they believe that they're killing the Messiah all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, I appreciate you taking the time to
come
out this way. We'll have to do it again sometime, whether it's more about something specific with Gerard or
you know,
something else that's going on. And, you know, I haven't given up on the urban mystics either. I haven't opened up the Rumble account yet, but
that's a great when you sent that flyer.
Yeah.
And it had Urban Mystic. I was like, that's the perfect title for that. For what because he's so much more than just, he can be modeled in so many other ways. You know?
Right, right. And we're talking about Matt Talbot and the flyer. We call him the Urban Mystic. And maybe we'll do that with the next show.
Yeah, the Urban Mystic.
And we'll announce our podcast. Anyway, Bill, thanks again for coming in. Patrick, thanks for making sure we get out over the airwaves. Maureen, for all that you do for us here at In His Sign. I want to thank our listeners for whatever part of the 2 hours you've been with us today. We're here Monday through Friday, 4 to 6. On 800 AM WTMR and over our website at inhissign.com. Again, thank you for all that you do. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.